Today we're going to continue with the Shir HaMa'alot, and I've chosen 122 and 125, which I think I may not be too ambitious to be able to do, since both of them mention Yerushalayim. The 122nd Psalm is part of the reason why some argue that the word Shir HaMa'alot had to do with Aliyah LaRegel, because of when they used to ascend. Though we saw that some of the other Shir HaMa'alot were really not related to Aliyah LaRegel and couldn't have been said by anybody there. We have a dispute here about the authorship and the time when this was actually written, given the fact that this one says Shir HaMa'alot LeDavid. And if you take the word LeDavid implying that he is the author, we will have a problem with it, because you will soon see that there are memories here that he could not possibly have had. So unless he's writing this prophetically, you will also question whether or not this is being prophetic about the time of Beit HaMikdash's existence, or whether this is being written by people who remember what it was like. So therefore, Radak, for example, takes the position, without even mentioning the fact that it says Le David, that this is being said by people who are in the diaspora, but who have recollections of what Yerushalayim once stood for, what it would have meant to them. Accordingly, you see where the dispute is. What then would you do with the word Le David? To some, it would be dedicated to David. And you will soon see why that's the case. Because remember that David, Melech Yisrael, Chai V'Kayam, and since we are looking forward to the coming of the Moshiach, who is Ben David, and who will rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, you have this kind of approach. And that is essentially the two major things. But others point out that whoever's writing this is describing the city as if he's seeing it now and talking to the city as if she was a she and currently present in second person and not in third person. Let's look inside and see what happens in the process. Shir HaMa'alot LeDavid, Samachti. Oh, how happy I was. Be'omrim li. But now it's not Kishe'amru li, or when they said to me, but when they say to me. So the issue then, Samachti, is I was happy, and then instead of talking about the past, it's as if the past is now unfolding in front of his eyes and switches into a present continuous. Be'omrim li, when they say to me, Beit Hashem nelech, we are going to the house of God, we would like to go to the house of God. The Radak takes the position, of course, that this is being written by people in the diaspora who have not forgotten Yerushalayim. Im eshkachech Yerushalayim, tishkach yemini. Oh, they would never forget. And so the author is writing, I am happy when I hear people say, oh, we would go. In other words, nelech can be both a wish as well as actually an intention, or better yet, an undiable hope. We will, in fact, go to Beit Hashem. Mm-hmm. This is the bitachon, the trust that people have. We will yet go up to Beit Hashem. Omdot hayu ragleinu. They were standing. But hayu, they were standing. So it's a past continuous. Our feet were standing. B'sha'arayich Yerushalayim, in your gates, Jerusalem. And notice now, he's not addressing anybody else except Yerushalayim, talking to Yerushalayim. Now, there was actually a reason for this. Chazal tell us that when they used to do Kam Aliyat HaRekel, they would reach a certain point, and there they would change clothing, and they would bathe. The people over there made arrangements for them to freshen up. And then they would climb up the mountains, and as they came to the gates of Yerushalayim, and imagine that you're going to Shah Yafor, Shah Hashpot, or any of these gates, we would stand and we saw your gate. And what did they see from the gates? Yerushalayim habnuya. We see the rebuilt Yerushalayim. And here there is some who take the position that this is from people that have come back from Babel. And they're envisioning, we've come back to you, and I see Yerushalayim habnuya. But Yerushalayim habnuya, the rebuilt Yerushalayim, Ki'ir shechubra layachdav. Very famous line. Is a city, and now the question is simply the grammatical translation, which chubra, which was bound to herself together. Bound to herself together. What are you saying here? So it's not a simple thing at all. Rashi, quoting from Masechet Ta'anit, which describes the Chorban, tells us as follows. Yesh Yerushalayim habnuya bashamayim. There is a built Jerusalem up in the heavens. Ve'atida Yerushalayim shel mata liyot kumotah. And in the future, Jerusalem on the ground will be like the Jerusalem above. And therefore, when they say Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim is a city that is bound together, is a mirror image together with the one on high. Almost as if you have heaven on earth. Heaven comes down to earth. Mitzudot David says, no. What makes it Yachdav is that it has all kinds of beauty and all kinds of styles, all brought together as one in the city. It is, if you like, a melange brought together. Others actually tell us, you see, and this is the Sfona, Yerushalayim was built in various times. So and it's true, you've got some Roman, you've got some there that was preceding the Roman era and then from the Judean period. You've got periods there from the Mamluks, you've got periods there from the Ottoman. And yet, oddly enough, each one added to it. But there is a harmony, he says. It's as if it was all planned to pull it all together. Ibn Ezra says, no. When they used to come up b'shalosh regalim, on Sukkot, on Pesach, on Shavuot, all of the tribes and all of the styles of Jews and all of the various methodologies of Jews in Yerushalayim, chubra layachdav, she embraced them and made them all as one. Because in fact, and here Ibn Ezra is consistent with the history, Yerushalayim, of course, was built on the place that David had taken from the Yevusim. That was the city called Shalem. And made it into a capital because it was bordering between Judea, Yehuda, and to the area that belonged to Binyamin. Binyamin from the children of
Rachel.
Yehuda from the children of Leah. And it was Yachad Shiftei Israel. Ultimately, when the 10 tribes were taken away, what we were left with was Binyamin, Yehuda, and of course some Levim and Kohanim. That's essentially what we are. We're only 1/6 of our nation. But Yerushalayim was built in such a way that nobody could say, it belongs to me. No, it belongs to me. It was the one place that was going to unify. And the Torah tells us that when Hashem would choose the place, the place that he would choose to put his name on it, at that point, building bamot, building altars and other temples across the country, which previously had been done, and previously there was a mishkan that used to roam from place to place, would no longer be allowed, and everybody would have to come to Yerushalayim. So because Yerushalayim was supposed to forge, and that was David's vision, a nation. No longer a collection of tribes, but rather a people. And you'll see that immediately on the next line. Hence Ibn Ezra's argument that the next line proves his case. Shesham, for there. And remember that Hashem said that he would put et shmo sham. He would put his name there. Sham, alu shvatim. There the tribes went up. They were shiftei kaf, shiftei yud and hey. Radak concurs that this verse definitely indicates that at that point when they would go up from a collection of tribes, they had become a nation. Edut l'Yisrael, proof, witness that they have now become Israel. No longer I am this, I am that tribe. I am that. I am just Israel. And when would that occur? When they would finally all come together, lehodot leshem Hashem, to come together to thank the name of Hashem. Did you notice how we played with the word Sham? Shem. Because Hashem said that would be the place, Hamakom asher yifchar Hashem, lasum shmo Sham. The place that God had chosen to place His name there. That would be that place. Ah, but Malbim points out something else. He says, Yerushalayim, as Yehuda Levi said, was the heart and the mind, the brain of Am Yisrael. All of the different tribes represented different organs and parts of the body. If you don't have Yerushalayim, you have nothing to hold it together. When you bring it all together, and the parts of the body are moved by the heart and by the mind that was in Yerushalayim, it now becomes Chubra LaYachdav. It becomes one nation at the same time. Rashi points out, however, why they're called Shifteka. They are tribes, and then repeating, the tribes of Yud-Heh, the name of Hashem. Because when it describes that accounting of Am Yisrael, and they were counted, and you have that in the book of Bamidbar, it said they were Hareuveni, Hashimoni, HaYehudi, HaLevi, such that every tribe, the first letter was He, and the last letter was Yud. That the name of Hashem became imprinted in the tribe. Therefore, they're called Shifteka. If they don't have Shem Hashem, then they're just Reuven, and they don't belong to this nation. It's only when they see themselves as people connected to God, and that becomes the common denominator that links and binds them together. Now, since we played on the word Sham and Shem, we continue. Ki Shama, for there, Yashvu Kisot Lemishpat. For there they sat the thrones of justice. Why? Because it was in Yerushalayim that they sat the Sanhedrin and the Batei Mishpat, which represented all of Am Yisrael, were placed there. And this is even before the Beit HaMikdash was built. And furthermore, Kisot LeBeit David, and they put the thrones there for the house of David. You will remember that David built his palace there. And he said, how can I be living in a house of stone when God is still in the tent? Remember that? And then Hashem said, no, you will not build it. Your son will build it. Therefore, some argue that perhaps this was written by Shlomo as a dedication to his father. And there you would have appropriate thing if it was written at that time. Ki shama yashvu kisot lebishpat. But those who take that this is written by the people in Golus, it is not merely a reflection of what was in the past, but what will ultimately be in the future. Because in the prophets it tells us that when Moshiach will come, in Yerushalayim a great court will be established to judge not only all the nations that persecuted us, but also the Jews that betrayed us and betrayed what they were supposed to be. That would be the great judgment day called Yom Hashem. And it is described in several of the apocryphal prophets where that is described. So what would happen is, Sham Yashvu, not past tense, he's seeing it past tense, but in reflecting that what was will yet again be. And there they will again set up the houses, the thrones for the house of David. Sono says no, it's not about the fact that there was a Sanhedrin, it's rather referring to the Beit Hashem. In Beit Hashem, during the time when they brought the korbanot, the sacrifices, the regular sacrifices, tmidim, the ones that were brought in the morning, the ones that were brought in the evening, there were anshei ma'amadot, there were people who were representatives of each tribe, standing around together with the kohanim, to indicate that they are the ones that are actually paying for this, and this is being done in the name of all of the tribes. So the Shama is referring to Beit Hashem, not merely to Yerushalayim, but to Beit Hashem itself, to Beit HaMikdash itself, where, if you like, around the area of the altar, were sitting both the thrones for the kings, as well as for representatives from each of the tribes. Then there comes a prayer. And to whom is it addressed? Sha'alu Shlom Yerushalayim. Beseech, seek the peace of Yerushalayim. Now you can't miss this. In the word Yerushalayim is Yerushalem. Yerushalayim has within it, you shall yet see, peace. Seek the peace of Yerushalayim. And those that love you, Ohavayich, Yerushalayim, Yeshalayu, they will live in Shalva. They will live in serenity. And what do I pray? Yehi Shalom Bechelech. May there be peace in your... And now the question is, what is Chel? Typically, Chel is troops. May there be peace in your... among your army. But the word comes from the word chol, or chil, can also refer to the fact that they used to have walls of stone, and in between, as a form of insulation and strengthening, it was filled with sand, chol. And therefore it refers to the walls. But there is a deliberate, in my opinion, it's a double entendre. Why? Because it's those walls or those that surround you that protect you. And if it's at peace, then there's no need. No longer is this a case of walls, you understand, that are there to keep anybody out. That's not the purpose. And so there is Shalom Bechelech, Shalva Ba'amunotayich, where typically palaces were places of foment and a lot of activity. Here there's serenity because the world is at peace. And for whom do I pray for this? According to the Radak, he's talking to the people outside of Yerushalayim, people that are in the diaspora, telling them, if you just seek, if you just pray for it, if you just want peace for Yerushalayim, recognizing that that's our homeland, then someday you will have it. And why do I seek it? For what purpose do I seek it? Leman achai v're'ai. I seek it for my brothers and for my friends. For the sake of my people, you see. For the sake of their well-being. Adabrana shalom bach. I would speak. And the word na, sometimes it's please. And sometimes it means now. Ana Hashem. Hoshia na. It's the second word. Adabra na. I would speak, I would declare now Shalom Bach peace. So, of course, Rashi, as he's wont to do, says this David HaMelech says, a letter in a bottle, envisioning, because we're told that actually David wrote and made the plans for how the Beit HaMikdash would be, knowing that he would not be able to build it, and that it would be for his son. But he envisions what this would be like, quite prophetically, and that is Rashi's position. I would seek peace for you now. And for what purpose? Not for his self-aggrandizement, but rather, Leman Beit Hashem, for the sake of the house of God. Not merely for a political unit, not merely for liberty from persecution, but for the sake of rebuilding Beit Hashem Elokeinu, our God, Avaksha Tovlach, I seek what is good for you. In other words, all of our hopes for peace, for rebuilding of Yerushalayim, is that ultimately Beit HaMikdash would be built, and that it could become a city shechubra layachdav, that can be combined, that is unified with Yerushalayim shelmala, with the heavenly Jerusalem, so that the Shechina could again return back to where it once was. This is, needless to say, an utter and complete masterpiece. But when I began to look for some of the articles and doing the commentaries, I found an article by Fiverr Meltzer. Now, you might know the name Meltzer because there was his famous father who was the Rosh Yeshiva that came to be the Rosh Yeshiva of Etz Chaim in Yerushalayim, and he is his son, Fiver Meltzer. Fiver Meltzer, for the years that he was alive, for many years, gave a talk on Kol Yisrael on a Perek Tehillim. It was like once a week show. And this one he spoke of in 1968. And he said, I approach this one, he says, with a great sense of reverence and awe, because he remembers how all of the radio stations suddenly had a bulletin breaking the news. Ha'ir Atika b'yadenu, the whole city is in our hands. Yerushalayim has been unified. Wow. And suddenly, it was not only when he got to the Kotel did Rav Goren blow the shofar, but before he did that, he began Shir HaMa'alot, Samachti Be'omrim Li, Beit Hashem Nelech. Oh, how happy I am when we were told we were going to go to the house of Hashem. And he remembers how that was read on Kol Yisrael and how the entire nation, everybody just went out in the streets and just started dancing as they had not danced before. Yerushalayim was reunited. So perhaps Chubrala Yachdav, when Yerushalayim is again reunited, the two parts of Yerushalayim were put together, and it suddenly got a whole new meaning. He also pointed out, if you look carefully, and you can do this on yourself, how many times two letters appear. Musically, what unifies this is the Shin and the Lamed. Leshem Sha'alu Shalom Yerushalayim. Musically, this is all held together. A small little poem, if you like, but one that is just so redolent with memory as well as with current history. And for the second mizmor that I chose for today is Kuf Kaf He. Shir HaMa'alot. No authorship. By the way, a tiny little five-verse song. Habotchim B'Hashem. Those that trust in God, those that rely on Him, Kehar Tzion, are like Mount Zion. Lo yimot leolam yeshev, it shall never fall. It will forever sit, remain in its place. No wind, no earthquake, no torrent, no storm. Nothing will ever shake it. The Medrash goes a step further and tells us as follows, that when Moshiach comes, Har Tzion, which is actually a very modest little mountain, will blow up and rise above all of the other mountains, rising higher, whether figuratively or literally, time will tell. But it will never be destroyed. It will never be forgotten. And it will always sit where it's supposed to sit and return to its place. Yerushalayim, harim savivla. Yerushalayim has mountains all around it. And it's true. The city is completely surrounded by these little hills. And there in the middle is Zion. Not very high. Actually, some of the others are topographically taller than that. And from certain places, you can actually see Har HaBayit, you know, looking downwards rather than the other way around. But Yerushalayim Harim Savivla. Now, it's incredible, to me, to each of these songs sometimes has a memory. My grandmother's younger sister, Dina, married a survivor from Auschwitz, Hungarian survivor. She was the youngest of the batch. He had just come into Eretz Yisrael. And he was killed when she was pregnant with her first child in 1948 during the Pagazim in Yerushalayim. Well, the Mumedina, you know, you can say Tamtendina, we said Mumedina. The Mumedina, whenever we went out to Tzohar, she was alive. My grandmother was no longer there, but she was the youngest of the sisters. And we went to visit her regularly. And she remained a widow, never remarried. She said one, there was only that one, and she had her one son, and that was it. But she liked the fact that I drove a car and pick her up, and she would sit in the car, and we would drive throughout Mea Shearim, and then we would go here, and she wanted sometimes to go up to Har HaZeisim to see the graves of, you know, I would take her wherever she wanted to go. And as we drove, she would say, Ah, Yerushalayim Harim Savivla. So, you know, sometimes you have a line, and you don't even know where it came from, but she would always say, Ah, Yerushalayim, it's got its mountains all over it. V'Hashem Saviv Le'amo. and Hashem is around his people. Yerushalayim is surrounded by mountains, and our people are surrounded by God, wherever we are. Now, this is not new. We've heard this before. In the 34th Psalm, we're told, Chonem alach Hashem sviv le'elav v'yechazem. An angel of God is encamped around his people, and he takes them, releases them from their troubles and from their imprisonment. He frees them. But here he doesn't talk about an angel. He talks about God himself being around his people. And, as the Radak points out, not merely in Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim has mountains around us. And we, no matter where we are, God is a wall around us. In the book of Zechariah, remember that Zechariah is one of the latter prophets who is describing the rebuilding of the Beit Sheni, the second temple. In the second chapter, he describes not what will be then, but what will be in the third Beit HaMikdash. Pazot teshev Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim will live as an open city, pazot. In the book of Esther, you hear that there were cities that were walled and cities that were pazot, open. Open cities that were not walled cities. Yerushalayim will no longer have a wall because there's no enemies attacking it and there's nothing to protect. It will be spread out open and Yerushalayim will spread. Ve'ani eyela ne'um Hashem. And then God says, and I will be for her. So says God, an oath, Chomat Esh Saviv. I will be a wall of fire around her. There won't be need for stone walls. For God will be a wall of fire around this open, expanded Yerushalayim. Alevai, you know, we're already seeing the expansion of Yerushalayim. And how long will that be? Me'ata ve'ad olam. From now until forever. But now comes a problem. And this next section, from this incredible pen to the city as well as God's protecting of us, even outside of the city, we suddenly move to a sad tone. Ki lo yanuach shevet haresha al goral hatzadikim. For we cannot, or we should not, or we must not. See, it's not clear what he's saying here. Is this a prayer? Is this a declaration of what must be? Is this a demand that the rod of evil not rest on the fate of the righteous? From here, most of the commentaries take the position that this is being written at a time when we are no longer sovereign and are under the thumb of the evil rod that beats us. But we know that God said that he would use certain people as his whipping rod. And the problem is that if the whipping rod beats on the righteous as well as on the guilty, people have a suspicion, sheleit din veleit dayan, there is no law and there is no judge. That in fact God has abandoned us. For it would seem that the fate of the righteous and the fate of the guilty is one. Now we know that kevan shenitna reshut lamashchit, since permission was given to the destroyer to go out and destroy, eino mavchin ben tzadik v'rasha, he makes no differentiation between the guilty and the innocent. So that when God's rage is unleashed on the world, swept in that rage are many innocent lives. And that has been our story throughout our time immemorial. Comes in between not merely a prayer, but a demand. You know, God, it is impossible, it is inconceivable that you allow the same rod of evil to fall on goral, on the fate of tzaddikim. If it just said on the tzaddikim, that would be one thing. But on their fate, the implication then is as follows, that the Rashaim perhaps are wiped out. And the tzaddikim, even if they are killed, their fate is not over yet. They come back. Mm-hmm. They come back. Now, why is he pleading for God to make a differentiation in this world, not merely in the next world, or in a way that we cannot see that they have been resuscitated, come back again. Leman, for the sake of, lo yishlichu atzadikim be'avlata yideim, so that the righteous are not tempted to send their hands to evil doing too. Why? Because, as is written in other places, and some of the people, some of the prophets actually came and say that the people came and told them, what good was it that I maintained my righteousness? What good was it that I maintained my innocence? Look at what's happened to me nevertheless. God made no differentiation. They killed the good along with the bad. It makes no sense. For naught did I maintain my innocence. For naught did I sacrifice so much to remain pure. You know, God, he's saying, people, good people, are sending their hands to touching things that they shouldn't be touching, doing things that they shouldn't be doing, because it's become clear from their experience that it doesn't make any difference. Therefore, what is my plea? Heitiva Hashem latovim. God be good to those that are good. Ulay sharim bilibotam. But he adds one more thing. And the question is this an addition or is this a qualification? If it's an addition, he says, I want you to be good to those who do good. And also to those who are honest in their hearts. In other words, their intentions are good, even if they're not always capable of fulfilling their intentions. Why are they not able to? They're being compelled by others not to do things. We, for example, are obligated to bring certain korbanot, but we can't. There is no Beit HaMikdash. We have people who want to do the right thing, really try very hard to do the right thing, but have not been able to take their desires and bring it to fulfillment. So he's asking God, be good to those that do good, but also to those that are honest in their hearts. Now others argue that it's a qualifier. Be good to those that are good, so long as they're also honest in their hearts. Because you've got people that have evil intention and end up doing something good, but they didn't intend to do it. It turned out by willy-nilly that way. So for those whose deeds and thoughts and feelings are consonant, those people, be good to them. But now comes the last. And here you will see the difference between Rabbi Shimshon Yifayel Hirsch and the Malbim, who are contemporaries in terms of their when they're living. The Hamatim Akalkelotam, and those that sway off in their crookedness. Akalkelot means not so straight, as opposed to Yashar, honest, straight. Yolichem Hashem, may God lead them. And what does that word et mean? I think in the past I told you that the word et is the most common word in the entire Tanakh, but it's an homonym. Sometimes it is a word that has no equivalent in the Western languages, and it comes to point out the object of a verb. Shatiti et hamayim. I drank the water. And since in Ivrit you can go and say the object first, et hamayim shatiti. So it points which of those is the object of the verb, that sometimes the word does not come from that root. It comes instead from the root Aleph Nun Taf. Et ha'elokim italech Noach. Noach walked with God. And is similar to the word Im, with Ein, with. But how is it different? Im is two walking together. Et is when there is a prime mover and somebody who schleps along for the ride. Hamatim al kelotam, those that go swerve off the path, may God lead them along with the actual evildoers. In other words, let them go to hell. And on this position, Sfono and others, who say that this is what's going to happen in Yemot HaMashiach, is that there will be a great judgment day, not only of all of the other nations, but of our own. and of our own, of those that chose to go off the right path, they're going to be led along with the evildoers. And as a result, Shalom al Yisrael. There will be peace because we're not going to have all the strife. It'll be only those that are true to Torah Hashem, His mitzvahs, to His way of life. And that's it. And therefore, there will be peace on Israel. Now, would you read me, please, what Rabbi Shimshon Asahir here says for that next verse? Read it.
To turn aside from that which is straight, Ekel, is crooked, deviating from the straight. The psalmist says, but as for those who do not remain Yishar, who cause their crooked ways to stray further and further from the straight path, mm-hmm. may God cause them to go the way of those men of violence mm-hmm. who are our foes. Let them share their lot. But for those who thereafter will remain with Yisrael, eternal peace has been ordained.
Comes along the Malbim, and he tells us as follows. He says, no, the prayer is different. He says, you're supposed to read this as follows. You're supposed to read it, you know God, heitiva, please be good. Latovim velayesharim belibotam vehamatim akalkilotam. Be good to those that do good and to those that
want to
have good intentions and want to do good but haven't been able to. Why? Because circumstances, because of lack of knowledge, because of other things. But now we have the problem about akalkalot. And he argues as follows. He says, yes, it's true that the word akal means crooked, but it only looks crooked to the eye, like a mirror that isn't quite right. He says, sometimes there are people who seem to be swerving, and what we do is we judge them as they're going OTD off the derech. He says, and it seems, instead of trying to judge them favorably or guide them accordingly, we've indicated that they're off, saying that they should be not part of the people. The boy Nishalalim, he says, but it's just lemaritain. It just seems that way. It just seems that they're going off, that they're not quite 100%. So that in Pilkei Avos, it teaches us that we need to judge each person favorably and not judge them until you haven't walked in their shoes. And according to some, and not judge them without any qualifying, but instead try to draw them back in the judging of them, in the writing them off. Mm-hmm. You who judge them will be considered poalei aven. You will be the ones that are considered the evildoers. Mm-hmm. And therefore there will be peace.